The topic for today is that of various kinds of emotional and mental illnesses. We won't cover them all by any means, but we can cover a number, and I'd like to start off with one that's a very small one, and we won't spend much time on it, but I would like just to mention it, and this is habit tics. A habit tic is a repetitive problem that people have. It can be mild or it can be severe. It can be so severe as to be somewhat like an epileptic seizure, totally uncontrollable and incapacitating. In its worst form, it is called the Tourette's syndrome. Tourette's syndrome can be quite disabling, but it need not be even when it is severe. I'm told that, was it Noah Webster, who was the first one who started doing dictionaries, that he had the problem of Tourette's syndrome. It got its name because of a doctor in France who had a famous patient, royalty of Europe, and worked with her with the problem and was helpful, but never cured her, and the disease got his name because he wrote it up and put it in the medical literature. There we have had some people with Tourette syndrome who came here and got some very good help. We had a young boy one time who was about 12, came with his parents. The parents were also in the program. They had to be for the program to be helpful for children, because the entire family has to do everything possible to help the child who develops Tourette syndrome. All other tics do very much better if the treatment is started early. As soon as it starts, you start on the treatment. What can we do for people? What are the signs? How can you recognize a person who's getting a habit tic? Well, in childhood, it may be something as simple as a little cough, which they do over and over, and children can do it. It can be an actual, a loud cough, but then somebody says, don't cough so much, and so they quit saying, and they just say, and if you tell them about that and they stop doing that, they may just say, so anyway, they get their little tick in. It may be something on the side of the face, like this. And that may be or may not be a problem. Women often will do some little tick that's throwing the hair off the face. They feel it on the forehead, and so instead of taking the hand and brushing it, they just sling the head, and pretty soon that gets to be a tick. They can't stop it. These little ticks that start in this way often start with a period of tension. The change from being in school to being out of school in the summer. And the mother says, oh, my poor children, they've been all cooped up for all these 9 months. Now we're going to really kick up our heels. And so every day she's got something planned. Every night is a spend the night party at their house, someone else's house. Few weeks of this or a few days of this, and the child is really stressed out. But the mother doesn't understand that because she's doing fine, but the child is under a lot of tension. And change of companions and competitive games, it's often during periods of this kind of thing that the person will develop the problem. It may be a tongue biting sort of thing, or a lip biting. Have you ever noticed that when you're under tension, you bite your lips more, or you just catch your lip and hold it when you're under tension. These are signs to you that should say to you, I'm under tension. I need to get help. Now, many of us we're very macho. Me, I'm so strong. I'm so well balanced. I don't need to do anything to help me with my, I can take it. And all this tension that's sort of making other people fall under, not me, I can take it. But it isn't good for the mind, no matter who you are, no matter how strong you are. It isn't good for the mind for you to decide on your own that I'm just going to take it. I'm not going to have any relief from this tension. Or I'm worrying, and all night long I worry. Every time I wake up for a few minutes, I think about my thing that I'm worrying about. And so you worry about it unrelieved. This is not good for the mind. We begin to get some sort of a circuit set up in the brain that wears the brain. And then the mind does not function well. We may think that we're doing well, but the brain begins to get short circuits. And then whenever you're under tension, we just become sidetracked into that worn area, because the brain no longer goes in the way that you would really like it to, and split-second decisions that must be made at a cellular level. So not all things that come through the brain are made at a conscious level. Some have to be made at a cellular level. This is done, and sometimes you're burning your pathways in the brain will make it so that you're not able to carry forward a thought in a proper way. And your work becomes inefficient. Your house begins to show signs of neglect, even when you're in it all the time. What can we do to help us with that kind of thing? We'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about all those kinds of things during this next session. What are some treatment things that you can do? If anyone would like the handout on habit tics, feel free to ask for them from my office or at New Lifestyle Books. They will be happy to supply this for you. It's one called Habit Tics. Here are some things that you can do to treat it. The first thing is to practice movements that are of the opposite nature. So if you've been biting your lips, just poke the lips out a bit. And that will bring attention to the fact that, yes, I ought not to be doing that. I ought to take care of my nervous system and not bring my lips into jeopardy. Then another thing that we have found helpful for some people is a little magnesium. Now, there are some foods that are high in magnesium. Let me just read some. Nuts and seeds and whole grains. Whole grains are such things as wheat, rice, oats, rye, millet, barley, but do make it whole grains. Farmers know how to treat their cattle better than we know how to treat our children. They feed them only whole grains and would never consider giving them polished grains. Oh, they're too expensive, those animals. But we do give them to our children. Doesn't make good sense, does it? So let's remember that we need to have high magnesium sources in our families. Corn is another good source of magnesium. Children are sent to school too early in life. They should want to go to school before you let them go. It's a sign that they're not ready to go when they cry. They don't want to go. Even though they may have They may have looked forward to it. Then when you take them and they weep and cry at the door of the school, I would take them back home. Not ready to go yet. Another thing is the age of the child, and I sharply disagree with the states, most states saying that 7, 6, even now 5 years of age, all children should be in school. I say that this is wrong. Children should not be in school until they're at least 8 or 10. And I'm not in a hurry when they're 8. If they want to stay out another year or two, especially is this true with boys. Much more attention deficit disorders and hyperactivity disorders in boys than in girls. And until all of this has been gotten under control, we must not send our children to school. 100% of the time, it's without fail that sending them to school intensifies these disorders. Then another thing is the various drugs that are given to children today. Some of them are irritants to the nervous system. And of course that includes such things as coffee, tea, colas, and chocolate. Those are irritants to children's nervous systems. Should never be given to children. So don't allow your children to have anything caffeinated, even when it's decaffeinated. Don't give them high sugar, a high sugar diet. And certainly don't give them the chemicals that are used to substitute for sugar. Who knows what those are going to do in the body? We keep hearing new reports of new things that are happening to the human body from these various sweeteners, concentrated sweeteners. Don't give them to your children. They're much too important for you to take a risk. We don't know what happens to these. The last thing I heard with, what's this common one that's used in everything now? It's also called Equal NutraSweet, aspartame. Last thing I heard on aspartame was the production of tumors in various parts of the body in some people. We know that if it can do this in some people, it's probably doing something bad in everybody. It just doesn't manifest itself early enough that we can stop in time to keep from getting the bad effects of it. Even such things as Ritalin given for people with hyperactivity, attention deficit disorders, even those can cause habit tics and other signs of irritation of the nervous system, which when stopped will usually go away. Not always, but usually will. Then, much outdoor exercise. Now, exercise is usually synonymous in the minds of some people with competition, but not so in mine. In my mind, the term outdoor exercise means purposeful outdoor exercise. And so you need to make this also synonymous with your thoughts. When you have outdoor labor for your children, try to let it be something that's purposeful. Purposeful labor. Planting a garden. Planting some flowers. Moving some shrubs. Demarcating a little area that will be their own, that they can plant a garden. And it's also extremely good for parents and even for grandparents to help children to cultivate such a little plot. Here are some things that will help you to test yourself for an obsessive compulsive personality. We develop obsessive compulsive personalities when we do things that are nonsensical or things that don't need to be done, but we are compelled to do them. We feel that I've got to sweep the front stoop again. We just swept it twice this morning, but some little leaf or something may have fallen on the front stoop, and so we sweep it again. Doesn't really need to be done. This kind of compulsive or obsessive behavior can literally destroy the life of some people. A person I knew had a hand washing obsession. You may have have known people with a hand-washing obsession. You may have had it yourself. If you have ever worked in a hospital, the tensions in a hospital may make you think, well, I need to wash my hands, and you probably do. So you wash the hands, and you feel very clean, but then you get to thinking, I wonder if the person who put that paper in the towel rack, I wonder if they laid that down on the counter before they put it up there. It's probably dirty. So wash the hands again. This time I'll just wipe it off on my skirt. Then get to thinking, oh, maybe I brushed up against that patient who has an infectious disease. Oh, maybe my hands need to be washed again. Do you see the pattern? This kind of thing may be the answer to number one. By the way, when you answer these, yes or no, keep account of your yes answers. Do you feel you must do something that does not need to be done? That's number one. Number two, do you go on binges? Eating binges, perhaps. Or hand-washing binges. Or house-cleaning binges. Whatever it may be. Number three, are you ashamed of the binges? They were excessive and excesses, and you know they're excesses. You don't want anybody to know just how many times you swept the front stoop this morning, or you washed your hands, or you brushed your teeth, or you, whatever, combed your hair, or plucked your eyebrows, or went to check on the children. Number four, do you spend time and thought on unusual and unimportant behavior, the kinds of things that we're talking about? Number five, do you love being alone so that you will not be considered odd or stupid when you do that activity? You're happy when everybody clears out of the house so that you can go on an eating binge or do some other thing, such as those things that we have mentioned. Number six, do you plan secret binges ahead of time so that you can enjoy being alone and doing those and doing your secret habit or activity? Number seven, do you behave sensibly before others and make up for it when you're alone? Number eight, do you miss out on nice things because of your secret behavior? Can't go to see the flowers at Callaway Gardens because you'd rather stay at home and indulge your secret habit. Number nine, have you tried to reform and failed? I rarely meet a chronic smoker who doesn't tell me, I can quit anytime I want to. But the evidence is contrary to that statement. They may have tried and failed many times, but they still think that they could stop anytime they want to. Maybe some of you were smokers. I hope nobody still is, but if you are, please talk with me. I have some help for you. I'm thankful that I'm a retired smoker, not a current smoker. 3-pack a day, retired smoker. That's a compulsion, isn't it? And some of us can know that we have obsessive compulsive personalities by some of the habits that we've had in our past. Is it possible for you to develop some kind of obsessive compulsive personality? You may know whether it is or not, or activity, by the kind of activities that you've had in the past. People who are overweight will often say, well, when I want to lose weight, I will. but I just don't want to right now. The fact may be that they truly cannot lose weight. They've tried it many times. It's lasted 2 or 3 weeks, and they know they should know, but they really have convinced themselves that they really like to do this and they want to keep it up. Number 10, do you resent the advice of others about some pet thing that you do? Driving too fast. That can be a compulsion. Can get so that any time you're on the road, no matter what the speed limit, if it's 45, you're going to go 55 or 60. That can become a compulsion. Somebody says you ought not to drive so fast. Well, you want to drive? You know, you immediately resent it, and you know, you something wells up inside of you right away. I don't want to be told that I'm doing something that's irresponsible or nonsensical. Number 11, even though you have tried to break your habit and failed, do you state you can quit whenever you wish? It's not just a thought, but you tell people about it. Number 12, have you seen a physician for this? And number 13, are you or others unhappy with it? Does it cause a problem in your marriage, in your home, with your parents, with your children? Now the scoring of this, if you have 3 yes answers, that indicates an obsessive compulsive personality and can spell trouble for you sometime in the future. Now I'd like you to take the sheets that you have distributed to you called Delinquent Developments. And I'd like to make a few remarks about delinquent developments. One of the best articles written in the scientific literature on this subject was written in Science News for May the 1st, 1993. If you have access to this issue of Science News, and you should through your local library, most libraries in the United States do carry Science News. And is there anyone who does not have a copy of this handout? If so, would you hold your hand now and we'll get one for you? This problem of delinquency is growing. Why is it growing? And while delinquency is not limited to modern society, they've always had delinquency in historical times. It is a fact, however, that it is worse now than it has been in the past. And it is worse this decade than it was last decade. It is growing. And while sometimes our upward trend may have a little bit of a wave in the graph line, it's still upward in delinquency, so that we're becoming a violent society right at the present time. And in the Science News article, the second paragraph, just under the little block that says career criminals and temporary lawbreakers may cross paths as teenagers. We certainly want to do what we can to make sure that the emotional and mental problems that we find in childhood are corrected so that our children will not become delinquent. And there are things that we can do. And Science News outlined a few, and I may have a few to suggest to you as well. The first paragraph under that block says clues were given, that's in the studies that have been done on this, to predict that the timing of puberty, along with certain personality traits, and the social world of high schools today all work together to foster different types of juvenile delinquency, depression, eating disorders, unmarried sex, and other serious problems of young people. Then a discussion is made of the problems with family life. We discussed some of those. We heard some of those discussed this morning in the study by Pastor O'Phil on the family. Some of those things are lack of organization in the home. The home is not kept clean and orderly. When we have children, everything in the home should, everything that the child's eye falls on should be orderly, unless we're in the actual process of using that room or those things. That's a high standard, isn't it? I would like to urge you to maintain that high standard. Have everything in order in your home. If you simply cannot keep things in order, then decide what things you need to pack up or give away or sell in a yard sale. You have too many things. If you don't have enough room for everything in your home, you have too many things. And they are burdensome to you. They have become such a trial to you that you can't even put them away. So trim down. And if they are too precious for you to sell or give away, pack them up and put them in the attic. Then in 10 years you can take them down and give them away. You probably won't need them during all that time. Now there's more to family organization than keeping things in order. You should have a time for things. For yourself as well as your children, you need to be orderly in your schedule. Have a time for going to bed, and go to bed then. Turn the lights off. A lot of people come in and they start a new project that they expect they'll finish before bedtime. But they don't. So they leave it in the living room or somewhere, and it's all spread out. And 4 weeks later, it's still all spread out, but by then it's a little dog-eared because people have stepped on it and broken some parts or whatever and made it so that it's not as nice a project as it was. And so then what to do? Scrap it? We've already got an investment of time in it. Do you see the kind of thing that can happen to people who are too ambitious and with their projects, and they make their lives disorderly because of it? Have a time and a place where things are done, and don't allow yourself to get caught in the treadmill of too many projects that cannot be completed. Have a time for meals. I remember one time I went into a home at a certain appointed hour. I was to meet the parents. The parents were not there, but one of the children was. Didn't know where Mom and Dad were, but said that I could come in and sit in the living room. They'd be on shortly. Then another of the children came in, went promptly to the stove and the refrigerator and served himself and sat down to eat. He sat down at the table, but he had to push yesterday's mail out of the way before he could find a place to eat. A total lack of organization in the home. This can lead to, this is a part of the problem in the social world of youngsters these days that makes it so that they go into delinquency. Then the next thing you'll see in the second column of page 10 on this sheet, you will see in the second paragraph down where it says, persistent antisocial behavior begins early in childhood or even in the womb, and continues throughout life unless a Christian conversion is made, followed by a mighty effort. Some women have told me that their children were hyperactive even in the womb. And I believe them, because the patterns of the mother's lifestyle lead me to believe that they would certainly be irritating to the unborn child. But things that we look at in childhood as being cute are no longer cute when the person is not a child. We need to make corrections in that. Corrections at the time, these develop in childhood. But do not feel that you can change all of these at one time. So when your child is having a problem with being sassy or talking back or being smart alecky, you must change this. But do not feel that once and for all is all you'll have to meet that problem. Children are given parents to be trained. Training does not mean breaking them. Training means a little constant pressure done with a gentle hand, a gentle but very firm hand, one that's very persistent, and that will help the child. But if you ask the child to give you your car keys and they run, you may think that's cute when they are 3 years old. But when they're 17, you will not think that's cute. By that time, it will be firmly established. The child understands that he can get the better of you and that he does not have to do what you say, even when it's a very reasonable request. And consequently, your child will then be out of control with major things. The time to change these kinds of personality traits so that they do not become enduring personality traits is in childhood. Now there are certain things that you'll see this on page 11, first column. There are subtle forms of brain damage that we find in childhood today. And one of those is the use of drugs during pregnancy, both licit as well as illicit. We should avoid drugs during pregnancy, if at all possible. It must be a life-saving thing to take a drug during pregnancy. And very few illnesses are more than just uncomfortable. And therefore, they should be dealt with very simple things and not with powerful things like drugs. Exposure to lead and child abuse or child neglect will also cause these subtle forms of brain damage that make it so that children are more difficult to discipline. Look at the bottom of the first column where it says it was stated in Science News that since the mid-1800s, improved nutrition and child and health care have lowered the average age of puberty. Well, it was recognized that this kind of treatment of children was what had caused their early maturation. And it was termed improved nutrition. But as my next statement says, I would not call a type of nutrition that increased the rate of delinquency, unmarried sex, unwed pregnancy, depression, a generation gap, that means disorderliness in the home, unwillingness to be obedient to parents, eating disorders and other teen problems as being improved, but rather as being very backward. What have we done that has made it so that we have these problems in childhood? Well, it is largely our rich and refined foods of today, the diet of today. Skip a paragraph there and let's read the next paragraph. In most cases, delayed puberty may allow a teenager to skip the maturity gap and remain crime-free. Girls who did not menstruate in one study by age 15 tended to avoid delinquency of any kind. Those who began menstruating by age 12 proved much more likely to get in fights, steal, use alcohol and illicit drugs, and commit other antisocial acts. How do you make it so that your child does not mature too early? Well, there are certain ways that you can do that. One way is feed them a totally vegetarian diet. And if there ever is a time in the life of a human being when they should take a vegetarian diet, it is during childhood. It will slow down their maturation. A biblical principle, some of you may know of it, says that or indicates that milk comes first, and then as the child matures, meat comes later. Well, at what time could you start giving them meat? Well, not early, that's for sure. certainly not before the age of 12 or 13. Now that's just purely from the standpoint of this delinquency issue. But I have many other reasons to encourage parents to allow their children to grow up in a proper, slow manner. And the totally vegetarian diet, if you do it properly, is certainly quite adequate for children and will save you many problems that would otherwise be your lot. Now, a totally vegetarian diet can be also very unhelpful. You can serve white grains and lots of sugar and fats galore and still call it a totally vegetarian diet. Nothing came into that diet from animal sources, but nevertheless it is quite unhelpful. The term vegetarian does not mean having to do with vegetables. The term vegetarian means vegetative, having to do with the production of healthful life. And so we want to make the distinction there. Give your children a vegetarian diet and make certain that everything that you give to them is at least as good as what a farmer would give to his cattle. Then another thing that you will see mentioned here, the youngsters who mature early, this is the next to the last paragraph, engaged in more antisocial behaviors if they attended a co-ed high school rather than an all-girl or all-boy facility. So if you can do so, homeschool your children or send them to the very best facility of which you are able. And I would say that in our day, most people could, if they would like to, they could homeschool their children. Now I'd like to talk with you next about how to control your habits. And some of you will recognize that many of these are strong Christian principles. Number one, admit your helplessness over your habit. Number two, trust in God to restore your control. It was God's intention when He gave you your body and entrusted you with its precious function of the mind. It was His plan for you that you would be in control of everything that came into your environment. You would be in control of your food, in control of your lifestyle. You would be in control of your sexuality, in control of your temper and your emotions. You would be in control of your money, in control of your possessions. Regain control of yourself. If there is any area in which you do not have control, focus on that area and ask the Lord to help you to regain control. Number three, pray to yearn to please God in this matter. Let's say you have a habit of overeating. Whether or not you're overweight, you overeat. If you have a habit of overeating, pray that you will be willing to be made willing to eat a proper amount. Yearn to please God in every action of your life. Have no reservations. Don't have some little area in your life, well, God can be in control of my money, I'll pay my tithe, I'll give my offerings. He can be in control of my time, I'll give Him my time, but I don't want to give Him the control over ice cream or chips. Everything else, but not that. Nobody's going to tell me how to eat. Let's not have an attitude of wanting to indulge ourselves with anything, and purely from the standpoint of what is good business sense, it doesn't make good business sense to want to or to be willing to displease God in anything. Heaven at any price is cheap enough, isn't it? And so when that indulgence comes up, tell yourself, would I rather be in control of my life, or would I rather have this indulgence, which is the most important to me, my indulgence or control of my life? And for the truly committed Christian, if there were no heaven, you'd still want to do what God wants you to do. If there were nothing more than this life, you'd still want to be in control of your life. Number four, take moral inventory searchingly. Honesty, purity, reverence, gratitude. Do you have all those? Number five, call your failures by name. If you overeat, when you pray, call your failure by name. Dear Lord, I am a glutton. Dear Lord, I am a thief. Number six, live as in the presence of heavenly beings. You remember when we were talking about obsessions and compulsions, we talked about the fact that if you have one of these obsessions or compulsions, you would not do it in front of others. Well, it has a very restraining influence on the life to know that we are constantly in the presence of heavenly beings. They are witnessing what we do. We want it to be right by the right hand. We don't want it to be way over there on the other side of some other beings that we would rather they weren't there, but we have allowed to come there. And so the heavenly beings are pushed aside. I am quite certain that when Moses was up on the mount to receive the Ten Commandments from the Lord, and the children of Israel were scattered around there in the plain with their, I don't mean scattered willy-nilly. We know how their tents were all put in very orderly fashion. But there they were around there, and there was Moses. And the voice of the Lord spoke the commandments. And do you remember what the Israelites said? All that the Lord has said, we will do. Well, it takes a decision from God to be able to make such a commitment. All that the Lord has said, we will do. I want to do it. If we have evil angels close to us, we cannot even make such a commitment, can we? We may know that it might be good. We may know that it might keep us out of trouble or out of jail. But we still don't plan to do it. We have to have the work of the Holy Spirit on the mind. And I am quite certain that the whole camp of Israel was covered as with a canopy by holy angels that kept out the evil angels and made them so that they couldn't get access to the children of Israel while they made that commitment. All that the Lord has said, we will do. We need to make such a commitment ourselves, on our knees, planning to live constantly as in the presence of heavenly beings, so that the restraining effect that comes to us from having such a being always in our presence can come to us. It's a great help to people. Teach those with whom you're working who have drug problems and weight problems and problems with marriage or sexuality. Addictions in all of these areas can be held in check if the person has a strong enough sense of the presence of heavenly beings with them. It's much more restraining than it is to have a policeman by your side. Number seven, give your testimony of how you're being helped and invite others in this way. That's a great help to people who have problems of various kinds with their behavior. Now, some of the activities that we're likely to carry to excess are eating, work, sleep, or lack of sleep. We may do either one of those, can't we? Marital relations or sexuality, leisure, rest, and recreation, extravagance in dress, or neglect of dress. We can carry that to excess. Have you ever known somebody who could never pass a store that sold clothing? They always had to go in, and they never came out without something. One woman told me that her mother had over 300 pairs of shoes. Takes a lot of money to buy 300 pairs of shoes. What do you do with them? She said that she'd wear one for maybe a week or two and needed a new pair of shoes. Kept on buying them. Now, the neglect of dress is just as much a thing that can be carried to excess, can't it? So that people are, you might neglect your dress once in a while, like when you have to jump out of bed to answer the phone and you don't have time to get dressed before you go. But apart from that kind of thing, we should be careful with our dress. We are children of the King. And to be neglectful of dress is a form of irreverence, isn't it? Form of irreverence. We've been made in the image of God. We not only look like Him, we have the great privilege of acting like God. And God is always neat and orderly about everything that He does. And we may be too, as children of the King. And then number seven, we can carry our luxuries to excess. Perhaps some of you have felt, as we've been talking, that you'd like to have the victory over some of your not very good habits. And here are seven rules for victory over habits. Number one, wrong behavior comes from wrong thoughts. What kind of wrong thought would make a person overeat or carry eating to excess? Could it be that your selfishness leads you to think, well, I'm going to eat this, I could eat the biggest one on the plate. Or I better eat this because it won't be left over for the next meal and I'll only get this one go at it. Do you suppose that kind of thing could be something that would cause some people to overeat? Or a lack of trust in our Heavenly Father's beneficence. He gave me breakfast this morning, but I'm not so sure He'll give me lunch today. So I'd better overeat at breakfast because I might not get something that's good for lunch. Wrong thinking is the source of all wrong behavior. What about things that are sort of involuntary? Somebody comes up to you and they say something to you and you immediately spit out something that's not nice. And then you're immediately sorry for that. That was wrong behavior. You knew instantly that it was wrong behavior. You were sorry for it. But it had already been done. What makes you do involuntary wrong things? Again, it is wrong thinking. It is often it's a decision not to be in control. A woman told me about a woman who works as a nurse in a hospital. She often has only 15 or 20 minutes for lunch. She's supposed to have 30, but the press of duties at times will make it so that she can only have 15 or 20 minutes for lunch. And often there are some things that the doctors bring in. They'll bring in a box of donuts and put them there, or a big box of chocolate-covered cherries, or a large tray of cookies, or a big cheese pizza running all over and looking very tempting. And it's there. And she's often tempted, although she knows that these things are not good for her cholesterol, or for other things. And when she describes these things to me, when she comes for her appointment with me, she will say, "I didn't do very well this past week." And I will ask her to describe it to me. Maybe I could help her with it. And she gives me this scenario, and I understand it very well. But I say to her, "Did you not have a lunch of your own?" "Well, my lunch was over in the other building." Or, "No, I didn't have a lunch with me that day." And then I say to her, "You really planned to fail, didn't you? You really planned to fail." "Oh no, I didn't plan to fail, it just happened that way." To fail to plan to succeed is to plan to fail, isn't it? So she had to plan ahead of time to be a success in her diet. Number two, everything depends on right action of the will. Now somebody might say, "Well, yes, that's willpower." Not really. The power comes from God. All that we have to do is to decide, "I want to have the rudder turned in this direction." That's your part. Then the power to do that comes from God. And nobody has willpower. We only have will action. We can make the decision, but then we must pray that God will give us the power. So what we have to do is to say, "The best thing for me is to take a certain behavior, do a certain behavior. Maybe it is not have sharp words with my husband or for my children. Maybe it is that I should go to town with a grocery list and not come back with a lot of clothes." Whatever it is that you have decided is the right thing, then kneel to pray and ask God that He will give you the power to do it. The power never was yours, but it is within your reach, and it is available to you through prayer. Number three, God's Word gives victory. Memorize it. And then, when you have a sudden need, you can bring it up instantly. And number four, live constantly with God. This is the kind of thing we were talking about earlier, of having the constant conscious awareness of the presence of heavenly beings with us. Number five, share your triumphs with others. When the Lord has given you the victory over something and you have had the power to carry through with what you know is the right thing, then tell others. Write to people. Tell them about your victories. Don't claim them as your own. Especially if you've been a failure in the past and others know about it. They know what kind of performance you do. Now help them to see that through the work of God in your life, you have been victorious. And number six, be persistent even through failures. If you're in business and you have a failure, you don't just quit because of that. You try some other way. When you have a habit, it's the same kind of thing. Even though you may make a failure, you must still be persistent. And number seven, choose the proper associates. When your improper associates are your family members, you must try to reform them, or you must try to make an example of yourself before them. And that's a study all of its own. If you make the kind of decision for your family that henceforth in this household there will be none of this or none of that, that may not fly very high. So you may need to, it's a study, a true study in how to go about making reforms in a family when not everyone wants to follow the same kind of rules that you do. I'm grateful for the opportunity that we've had to talk about emotional and mental problems, and it is my prayer that that a discussion of these matters will be a great help to you. Class is dismissed, and you have lunch in a few minutes. What is it, at 1? So you have a little while. If anyone would like to stop by New Lifestyle Books and pick up some of the materials that I have mentioned, I think they are probably open now and will probably be open after lunch. Okay, you are dismissed.
You have been to another special American Cassette Ministries presentation. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright American Cassette Ministries, all rights reserved. To order CDs or audio cassettes of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 1-800-233-4450. International calls, please dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americancassette.org. There you will discover the largest selection of genuine Adventist preaching available. American Cassette Ministries is not a one-man band. It's an orchestra of outstanding speakers who are all on the same theological page. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Cassette Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony. Our email address is info@americancassette.org. We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and financial support are important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.